Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, my partners in bravado, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we've got a tidy like 21 minutes pipe of radio now with Ronald. Our boy's busy. He's going here and there doing things. We'll get as much radio in with him pipe as we can, and we'll go as long as we need to finish up our radio program today, boys. We got a couple of intriguing topics. What does boredom look like as an adult? I think that's fascinating. I've been thinking about that a little bit lately. And then what motivates you at this point in your life? We'll get to those topics and so many more right after this quick break. All right, boys, we're back. Let's talk about boredom. What does boredom look like as an adult? And what makes you bored? I feel like I'm almost never bored unless I'm in a meeting, and then I'm very bored. But then I start doing my own stuff and I make myself unbored again. I don't get bored a whole lot. Where are you guys at on this? Do you experience boredom? And if so, like, what does it look like? What makes you bored?
Yeah. So this question came up. I was talking to a friend who is also raising teenagers, and we were laughing because of, you know, our kids are constantly like, I'm bored, I have nothing to do. And we both had the immediate reaction of, nothing to do sounds like heaven. Like, that's when there is nothing to do, I'm not bored. I'm at peace.
That enjoying
sounds
yourself.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And so it was the total difference in, I don't know, stage in life, age, maturity, whatever, where at some point you just learn to like sit and do nothing and just kind of go, oh, this is restful. Because there's always so much to do that you don't even have a chance to be bored by like vacancy. That never happens.
Yeah, no, it's true. Big R, what about you, baby?
Yeah, I'm with you, T. I think I'm thinking of the things that create boredom in my life, like meetings, like things like you described. Mm-hmm. But then, like, to Pipe's point, it's like, I think what I experience is restlessness, but I think that's different than boredom.
I think so.
Yeah, I think restlessness is it's waiting to do the thing that you want to do, or it is in a place where there is nothing to do, but you want to do something, but there's nothing available. I don't know. I think that's different than boredom. Maybe it's semantics, but I feel myself restless. But I'm like Pike, when I have a pocket of just nothing to do for a couple of hours or a day, like I'm not unhappy about that ever.
Yeah, same. That restless boredom is interesting. I remember very distinctly this kind of sensation in college, and this was in the 90s. This was pre phones and internet, really, and pre sort of ways to entertain yourself in boring contexts. I remember sitting in like these lecture halls with just this sense of being trapped. Like, if I could just get out of here, you know?
Yeah, it's like intellectual claustrophobia or something.
Dude, yes. And I was like climbing the walls inside, just going, if I could just get to that door, I would be free, you know? And you're trapped in there, you're bored, you can't really do anything. And, you know, if you're in a class with no friend, you can't even like chat with your friend in the back or whatever. And I remember that feeling like really frustrating, but that was 25 years ago. You know, I think now, you know, school's been over for a couple of weeks for me, and I'm coming into this season of, I'm not bored, but I'm just less busy. And in being less busy, I'm actually having more ideas, and I'm able to be creative, and there's more that I want to write about. So I think for a creative person, a little bit of boredom is not a bad thing, you know? And if we go pillar to post, and if every minute of every day is scheduled and accounted for, it doesn't leave a lot of time to, like, kind of let the mind wander and just, you know, light upon a new idea. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense. I feel the same way. And you know, that climbing the walls lecture hall thing that you're describing, I feel that now very rarely, but it's almost always just where it's when I'm obliged to attend a thing that I have no interest in, you know, social functions or like, when I worked in publishing and had to attend conferences, on those rare occasions I had to go kind of sit in on a session because it was one of our authors speaking or whatever.
Yeah.
35 seconds in, I'm like, my heart is starting to race because of how badly I want to leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would just find excuses to get out of there. Like, oh, I got to use the restroom, and then I just never return and that kind of thing. And, so that piece, I'm like, oh, I still feel that. I just don't have nearly as many obligations put on me that make me feel that.
Yeah.
And on the creativity side, I think that's part of the reason I don't feel bored very, like with vacancy very often, is because that is when the mind can just sort of, it can rest and recover, and then also discover, like you said, new ideas. There's things come to mind that never, there is never a seam for them to get in otherwise.
Dude, so I have a question about the first thing that you said. Do you think boring people know that they're boring? In the sense that, you know, we've all been in these meetings. And,
well, they keep publishing books, so no.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, dude. But I feel like, and all three of us do a good bit of public speaking, I feel like I've definitely had moments where I've been a few minutes into a talk or a few minutes into a digression of a talk, and I'll internally just feel this sense of, oh no, I'm being boring, or this is boring. I know it's boring. It's boring to me. It has to be boring to them. You know, like, do you think boring people know that they're boring?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. I think to have any sort of awareness of that means that you'll be on the less boring side of the equation. I've said this before, like, me and Big M have had this conversation many times when it comes to public speaking. I think we've talked about it on the ramp, but like, what's your greatest fear when you're speaking in front of people? For a lot of people, it's, I don't want to sound dumb.
Yeah.
I want to look educated, whatever it is. My thing is always, my greatest fear is to be boring as a public speaker. So that's why there's just a lot of that's why I insert a lot of humor and all those kinds of things. But it's just like, the worst thing for me is to see somebody kind of nodding off. You know what I mean? Like, that to me, I don't care about sounding smart. I don't know, that as an Enneagram 4, it's just, that's not like high. And I never have to worry about that anyway, right? Ha ha. But like, that's not high on the scale for me. But but man, to think that people are like pipe, where they're squirming and they just want to get out of there. And I know, dude, as a public speaker, you can't avoid that. It doesn't matter how great of a speaker you are. There's some people who just, it has nothing to do with you. They just don't want to be there. They're not in the frame of mind for it. But man, I think to even be aware of that means that you're constantly working to at least be compelling in the way that you know how.
Yeah, no, that's good. And that's true. So I want to pivot to the second part of the question. Like, what makes you bored? As you think of your current life, what makes you bored? I think for me, it's just obligation.
Yes.
Like, if a thing is obligatory, I'm inclined to be bored
by it. And you can't attach value to it. You're like, I'm stuck here giving somewhere between, I don't know, 5 minutes or 6 hours of my life.
Yeah, right, right.
To a thing that I can attach zero value to. I would be better if I wasn't here.
Well, and that's the double bind of adulthood, right? Because you journey into adulthood a few years or decades, and like, you become really good at attaching value to things or not. Whereas I think when you're young, a lot of things promise value, right? So like, if you're early career and you go to a meeting when you're 21, you're like, something great might happen at this meeting. I might be able to impress someone, or I might be able to make a connection that will move me forward. But at 47, I'm like, no one's impressing anyone at this meeting. None of these connections will move me forward. Like, this is just another meeting. So yeah, the better you become at like kind of correctly assessing value, the greater the risk is that you'll be bored. So yeah, valueless obligation, I think, is high on the boredom quotient. What else makes us bored?
Yeah, I think it's just like, I'm again, Big M, you know, like, she is just inherently more curious than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, my tastes are so narrow in some ways. So a lot of it is just, I see something over there, I just have no interest in it, right? I have no interest in exploring it. And I don't know what that, I probably had more interest when I think Pipe wrote about this, right? But I think I think I had a little more interest and curiosity when I was younger. But like, as you get older, I don't know, it can go either way, right? As you get older, those things can expand or they can narrow. And I think if they narrow too much, that something's like, I think something's wrong with me, maybe potentially off in me because they've narrowed so much. Mm-hmm. But like, if you talk about Big M, she is just infinitely curious, even about stuff that she doesn't, like, she'll never engage in it, but just like learning about it. Like she can engage in things that I'm doing that she'll never do. And you would look at on the outside and go, you can't possibly have any interest in that. And she'll be like, well, no, but I mean, it's just kind of fun to like kind of learn about it, even for just a few minutes. And I'm just like, oh man, I don't want to invest any time into anything that, well, like what you said, T, which is like, it gets a little pragmatic, right? You get to this, like, what's in it for me? What's the cost, you know, benefit?
Cost benefit. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so we, I don't know, maybe that's because we're always like, because we're people that are getting deals and there's potential to like do something with something. And it's like, if that's not there, then you just kind of shrug it off.
Well, and the huge kind of tragic risk in what you just said is beginning to view people in that way, right? Where, and we all have jobs where we interact with people a good bit. And if you're not careful, you can become the kind of scumbag who just sees people as like inherently valuable or not. Like, you know, you walk into a room, you case the joint, you decide which two people are worth talking to, and you only talk to those people. And that's at odds with what all three of us do, or what we all three purport to do.
Are supposed to be doing.
Are supposed to be doing, which is, discipling people and ministering to people and just being a friend to people. And if we become too adept at like doing that kind of cost benefit work that life requires a lot of, then we run the risk of, you know, just being,
just becoming monsters,
just becoming monsters, right? Just become, and in doing so, becoming boring. Pipe your thoughts.
That's true.
There's there's another aspect of boredom in human interaction. Like what you're talking about, sort of the like, I'm going to connect with this person to gain. So sort of using people as assets. I'm going to use them I'm going to use up this resource and discard it, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's another aspect. Like there are just people who are so inane, they're boring, you know? They're the kind of people who, you know, the conversation before it starts, because you're going to talk about how work is going, what deal they've closed recently. Like, it's all about money. It's all about purchases.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yes.
And you're just like, man, I could not care less about the new truck you bought. Like, because it's so not different than the last truck you bought.
Yes. Yeah. And with people like that, I just want to like hand them a card that says, you win the interaction. Like, let's just skip the 8 minutes. You win, you know?
Right. And in my mind, it's not so much I'm at my best. I'm not devaluing them as a person. I'm just like, this is none of the stuff that I care about. Like, if they cracked a joke, if they told me, if they were passionate about something, like, there's a big difference between somebody who's passionate about their work and somebody who's talking about deals they've brokered, you know? Right. Because you can actually be curious about somebody who's passionate about their work, even if it's a field you don't know anything about. But if they're just like, man, I'm having a great time. Okay, now we're talking about you. You know, your values and things like that. I get profoundly bored. And that's why some of those, you know, the social circumstances where you're like, I'm going to go in. It's like a mixer kind of thing, which I don't have to go to many of, thank God. But, you know, it's often through like, you know, somebody's work and you get invited to something or whatever. And you just like, everything is surfacey. And I just come away and I'm like, that was the biggest waste of time. And I was so profoundly bored.
Yeah. So in that kind of situation, for both of you, like what kind of persona do you adopt? And like, what's the biggest risk in it? Because I think in those situations, especially if I'm feeling a little cynical, a little frisky, I'll double down on like being a little snarky and a little shocking. And then I'll get in the car to go home and go, I overdid it. You know, I feel bad now. I feel gross. It was too much, you know, too much by half.
I can do that too, T. I mean, that's, I think what I'm offended by is when, this is what offends me, is when you hear somebody that you don't know well, and I have to qualify it with that, because you give a lot of latitude with people that you've cultivated relationships with, right? Hey, talk about yourself for go on and on. I'm because I know you and I care about you and I love you and we have a relationship that kind of attests to that. Like, I have time for you, you know, even if it's not all the stuff I'm most interested in. Right. Yeah. So I have time for that. It's when you're talking to somebody that you barely know, and they will just, it's like a run on sentence, and there's such a lack of self-awareness to that and in that. And I think sinfully, right, I'll just own it. Like, it actually angers me in a lot of ways, because I can't believe that they don't catch what they're doing. And I can't believe that I'll be sitting with somebody maybe for 30 minutes. I know I sound like a monster right now, but like, I'll be sitting with somebody for 30 minutes. I don't know them. They've literally talked about themselves without even barely looking at me or asking me a question. And for some reason, that just destroys me. That just kills me. And I can tend to just be like, I can feel so insulted by that, you know? And like UT, I can kind of return snark for what I perceive as their, you know, their lack of self-awareness. And so that's a tough one for me because I, you know, it, in our line of work, that tends to happen, you know?
It does. More I was going to say, you wouldn't enjoy working with college students then, because that's kind of the...
No, yeah, you have a gift, T. I mean, because that's it, right? They're just going to tell you everything that they've ever thought or dreamt about within like a 30-minute window.
That's right.
And you're supposed to just think it's the most inherently fascinating thing you've ever heard in your life, right?
Well, and by God's grace, I sometimes do, you know. sometimes it is fascinating, and sometimes the Lord just gives me the endurance to just kind of hang with it and you know what to say next. But I have a question about that, though. And I actually have two questions about that kind of person. Question number one is, where do you think that comes from? Like, what sort of need do you think that that's fulfilling in that person? You know what I mean? And question number two is, do we have any sort of responsibility to, like, coach that out of them or train that out of them? You know what I mean? Because somewhere along the way, somebody should have said, don't just go into a room and bloviate about yourself for 30 minutes, like, or don't go on a date, or don't go to coffee with your friend and, you know, make it all about you for an hour, you know, like, somewhere along the line, our parents or someone trains that out of you. So do you feel any kind of particular responsibility there / where do you think it comes from?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to have, like, I would never do it with somebody that was doing it upon like our first meeting, you know. That's the problem. It's like, yeah. To me, it requires a relationship to where you can get in there and go, hey, man, can we talk about something? Because like, you do this, and I think this is not a great trajectory for you in life. You're just going to push people away. I think it's lack of, like, a lot of it too, man, is just people that have just a lack of, like, you know, social awareness and social, you know, in those kind of situations. They lack sort of that, you know, they lack just sort of those social manners. You know, they don't get that.
I think at the college level, and, you know, college and teen, there's a lot of immaturity. Like, the thing that people under the age of like 25 think about most is themselves. And I mean, that's probably true for all of us, but you hopefully the eyes sort of lift as you get older. And not only that, you think about everything through your own perspective. How does this benefit me? As opposed to sort of the bigger picture. And so, like, you know, my older daughter is going to be a senior in high school next year. This is an ongoing conversation with us where I'm like, hey, you can't just enter an interaction and think, how does this benefit me? What is the cost to me? You have to think, what is the purpose of this thing for everybody so that you're not just selfish. When somebody's like 45 and does what you guys are describing, I think that's a profoundly lonely person.
Yeah.
You know, I was at a work function with my wife a year or two ago, and there was one guy in particular. You can kind of tell, like, he's the social misfit. Everybody else is kind of mingling in groups and mixing groups, and it's all sort of socially inane, but it's sort of appropriately that way, and everybody is appropriately giving ear to everyone else. And this guy would just go on for 20 minutes. I had met him 45 seconds before about his sales numbers and this and this, and he's hoping to do this year. And I don't even remember his name, you know, at this point. Like, it's, and I thought about it later, and I thought, I bet that guy doesn't have any friends. Like, I bet he has nobody to talk about life with, so nothing has perspective. You know, because when somebody just monopolizes like that. It has to be because they're not sort of bouncing off different pieces of conversation and different pieces of life in different relationships where they have sort of a group of people speaking into them, listening to them, sharpening them, whatever. And so I don't know what our responsibility is to help them, because especially if you don't know them well, you can't be like, hey, you've been talking for 20 straight minutes. You want to quit?
Yeah.
As tempting as that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And so you kind of try to like steer it towards something that might be remotely interesting, or you just try to get out of it. And I want to take a break because we need to take a break. And when we come back, I want to ask you about how you get out of stuff like that. We'll be back in 2 and 2. All right, boys, we're back. So you're in that scenario. You're getting filibustered by some dude who's just bragging about accomplishments or laying some inanity on you. What's your exit strategy? Are you smooth with it? Or are you just like, get me out of this as quickly as possible? Thoughts on that from either of you?
Yeah, I mean, I think you learn if you're learning well, I think in what we do, you learn how to become an expert transitioner, right? Mm-hmm. Which is just, mm-hmm. If you're in a room full of people, I don't know, I have different things I do, phrases, and it's mainly just, hey, I want to move on. And, you know, I see this person over here. I'd love to chat with them. I haven't seen them in a little while. And so it's more of just, you know, hey, I hear you. It's been great chatting. It's been great catching up. I see Ted and Barnabas over there. I'm gonna go catch up with them. But dude, it was great. It was real, and we'll talk soon.
You know, yeah,
back
yeah.
Up. Just those kind of, I mean, really quick, almost inane kind of like transitional kind of phrases where you're not trying to humiliate them, but you're saying, okay, I'm moving on, and it's okay that I'm moving on.
Yes, yeah. I find myself in older age wanting to be like, for my own like conscience, like really honest, even in the way that I toss off those phrases. So like, we'll talk soon. I try not to use that as much because like, in a perfect world, maybe we won't talk soon. And
yeah, I really like, hope we won't ever right? talk.
Like maybe we'll never see each other again, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. I find myself like editing myself more along those lines. Pipe, how do you get out of it? What's your strategy?
Oh, and the comment that you just said about trying to be honest, that one's hard because sometimes you can't even be like, man, it's been great talking to you. Because really, you're like, it's really good to be no longer talking to you. You know, I love that I'm departing. Uh-huh. That one, yeah, that's when you sort of drop the like, man, it's been real. Because what does that mean? As right. Anything you want.
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm making no moral judgments. I'm also making no qualitative judgments. Here we go.
Yeah.
It depends on the context. If it's a social environment where I don't, you know, I don't really know anybody, I'm not sort of, you know, people aren't seeking me out, then I just try to go to the bathroom, you know, and then on the way out, you catch a different group of people. You're like, man, I got to use the restroom. Just stroll. And, you know, maybe you look like you're peeing 18 times a night, but it's a good way to go.
Yeah.
Or just be like, oh, my drink's empty. I got to go fill it up. And maybe they're the kind of person who follows you, but usually they don't. So you can just sort of extricate yourself with a functional excuse. If it's at church, for example, where it is a significant part of what I do to talk to people, and somebody is sort of filibustering, I never want to lie to them, but I'll either say something like, man, there's some things I got to take care of. You have my email, hit me up if you want to talk further about this.
Yeah.
And like 99 times out of 100, I never hear from about it because they just wanted the outlet.
Sure.
Or I'll say, hey, I see somebody I've been meaning to talk to, which is often the case. You know, there's people who I can only catch on Sundays. And so I don't do that 2 minutes into a conversation, but I will do it 12 minutes into what should have been a 2 minute conversation.
Yeah.
And so those are ways you can sort of deflect off. But I really do try hard not to kind of give the impression that I have super valued a conversation that has really wasted my time.
Yeah, totally. So in church context, I totally use my wife for this. So I'll start looking around and I'll be like, dang, man, I hate to do this, but I got to catch up with my wife, which is not untrue, right? So typically after church, you know, she'll go and talk with her girlfriends, and I'll have a couple of dudes that I chat with, and, you know, every once in a while I'll get waylaid by somebody and just get drawn into some long thing. And yeah, you can always kind of lift up the chin and sort of start looking around and go, I think my wife's trying to leave. I got to catch up with her. And that's not untrue. And it usually works. I'm a big bathroom guy at work stuff, right? So I figure yes. In any kind of like large group work meeting, I got two cards to play. I've got go and get coffee. I can do that once. So I can go to that little station in the back. I can take my time making a coffee. That'll buy me a couple minutes. And I can walk out and go to the bathroom. And I could stay in there for a while. But my coworkers have caught on to this. And so the big like faculty meeting that we have once a month, they know I'm a big bathroom guy, and I'll mosey out there at least once. Then they start hitting the group chat about me going to the bathroom.
They're like, Ted, your bowel's okay?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Nice prostate, you know. And then
men of a certain age.
Exactly. Exactly. So they're on to me. I gotta get some new tricks up my sleeve for next year.
In social interactions, the smartphone can be really handy because you know, you keep it in your pocket, and like if somebody's just going and going and going, and it's a last resort because the smartphone is always a little bit rude.
Yeah.
But if you just pull it out and you look at it and you're like, man, something came up. I need to take care of this.
Yeah.
The something came up is it is suitably vague to not lie.
Right.
Not even mislead.
Yeah.
Just like it doesn't mean anything. It's kind of like it's been real. And right. What came up? I don't know, an Instagram notification, an excuse to leave. It doesn't really matter. Because we have notifications on our phone all the time. Anything is coming up at some point. You're like, hey, I gotta take care of this. And, and most of the time people are like, oh yeah, totally. And that's a last resort. It's sort of like the eject lever, you know, and you're like, well, this thing is going to crash and burn anyway, so I better eject while I can, kind of thing.
Something came up, meaning the shirt that I've been tracking for a year and a half on eBay is 15% off, you know, that's something. But
got an Amazon notification that my package shipped. I just need to see which one it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And that puts like the social contract on them of like, they would never say, oh, like what came up? Cause it could be like my daughter's in jail or, you know, so it could be something really sad. So nobody's going to push you on it.
Right. And you would never do that, or I would never do that, if it was a conversation about something, if they were pouring their heart out about something of significance, you wouldn't be like, something came up.
Yeah, exactly.
You would ignore your phone. And
if they were bloviating about their sales figures, you would absolutely say something.
Oh, I have done that so many times when I just get, you guys are talking about that, just the profoundly unself-aware people who are just, they don't realize that like minute 17 of a talk about ChatGPT is 15 minutes too long for most of us.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true.
And when somebody's like that, I'm like, look, you not only broke the rules, you've now rewritten the rules. And so I no longer need to abide by the rules. So something came up and I'm gonna go look at Twitter because that's more valuable than minute 17 of ChatGPT or whatever.
Maybe that's what Ronnie's doing. I think this show's 15 minutes too long for him. You know, we got a good 15 minutes out of him this morning and then he's gone. What a workhorse, you know? What a machine. He's just
there's an interesting technique, because he did let us know on the front end, hey, I've got like a hard 20 minute out today. Which maybe that's what we need to do in these interactions. Like, you go into a meeting and you're like, guys, I got to leave at 11:15. And you
I got
just
20
give
minutes.
Them...
Yeah.
I've done that before when I don't have anywhere to be, but I know it's a waste of my time.
That's good.
But it only works in meeting contexts. Not like somebody catches you for a conversation. Right. Now, if somebody calls you on the phone, you can do that. Because again, phone conversations, they can't see anything. They don't know what you're doing. And so if somebody calls and they're like, hey, do you have a few minutes? You can be like, I got five.
Yeah.
That way, when you give them eight, you seem generous. And you just saved yourself from a 15-minute conversation.
Absolutely. That's sound advice, Pipe. Piper, let's take one more ad break, which I'm happy to do for the record. And when we come back, I want to talk about motivation. We'll be right back. All right, Pipe, we're back. One last question, one last thought. I'm just popping open the text again. Amazing radio. Just
show notes extraordinaire.
Show notes extraordinaire. Radio professional. What motivates you at this point in your life? I think it's a fascinating question. I would have actually wanted to hear Ronnie on this because I feel like his motivation schematic would probably be fascinating to us. I don't know.
Yeah, we can come back around to that one with him. Like, we should talk about it, but I definitely want to hear, because he goes in so many different directions and is involved in so many different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I never think about it in terms of motivation, but I mean, it's a fair amount of effort to do what he does. So I'm assuming something is driving him.
Yeah. And I'm not impressed by it. Like to put a fine point on it, I'm just sort of interested in where the motivation comes from, because he's in his 50s, but he's motivated like someone in his 20s. And I honestly can't relate to that. I mean, in my 20s, I was extremely motivated and extremely probably annoying to people in that. But I don't know. I'm probably, like, I have to really work hard to be motivated now. Like, I have to really talk myself into stuff. And it's just not as easy as it used to be. I would say for me, this is going to sound horrible, and it's the least sexy answer imaginable, but it's just money. You know, like, if something pays well and I'm not morally opposed to it, I'll probably do it. Because I now see projects as like home improvements, essentially. Like, I can, you know,
that one will pay for X.
Yeah. I can replace the HVAC unit that's going to go out, or I can, you know, resurface the sidewalk or whatever. And that's so unsexy, dude. Like, at 28, I was like, this book is going to change the world. This is a great idea. And now I'm like, this is going to change my roof, you know, in good ways. I hate that about myself. I really do. I wish I could be more like Ronnie in this, because I think he really believes in it. And I find that both ridiculous and appealing at some level. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you in sort of my observation of, I mean, and Ronnie's not the only guy like him. I know a handful of guys who, like, every time I look on their Instagram, they are flying somewhere to meet with a group of people to do this kind of thing. And I'm just like I get exhausted looking at them, but they're older than me. There is a drive and a value system that exists there, you know, or guys who are like, every time you turn around, they're writing a new book. And I realize I just described Jared Wilson twice, but there's a motivation there that I'm like, yeah, I don't tap into that. I'm not that guy. What I've realized for me is that I used to view motivation and passion as the same thing, you know, so in my 20s, which meant that I was motivated like pinball, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was passionate in a bunch of different directions, but never sort of I never had a drive toward any thing.
Yeah.
And now I realize that, like, it's a little bit like inspiration and writing, you know?
Yeah.
Where you can write really well without a ton of inspiration.
Yeah.
Because once you learn how to do it, you're like, no, I'm going to do this work and I'm going to invest myself in it. Maybe inspiration comes, and that's when I write those handful of beautiful paragraphs. But mostly, I'm just doing the work because it's because of whatever value system, you know, be it money, be it benefiting someone, whatever.
Yeah, and, no, that's true.
And so, and at this point, I realize motivation for me is a calculus of, is it worth it?
Yeah.
And the more worth it is, the more I throw myself into it. So, for example, being called into the pastorate has changed that calculus dramatically for me, because worth it is often very intangible. Mm-hmm. that, you know, is it worth it to meet with this person? Well, the answer is yes, because they're in a position of needing counsel, needing advice, wanting to study right. something. Like, inherently, that is valuable. Now, if they come back right. 18 times about the same problem and they're stuck in the same place, the value in meeting with them goes down. And at some point, you go, basically, you know, fish or cut bait, buddy. Like, you need to make some changes, that kind of thing. So, and the same thing is true for writing for me. You know, I still enjoy writing, but at this point, it's like, I don't need to write to fulfill myself.
Right.
I don't have a lot of passion projects right now. However, if an opportunity comes up and says, hey, would you consider contributing this to this website or this magazine or whatever? I think about it and I go, what is it worth? Some of that is money. Yeah. I don't do a lot of writing for free unless it's for our church.
Right. Right.
Some of it is the organization. How much do I love and support this group of people doing this ministry? So, like, I write for He Reads Truth, and there's not a lot of money in that,
right.
but I love what they do and the focus of what they do, and I enjoy the work itself. So there's that piece. But if it's an outside article and they're like, hey, do you want to write an article on, I don't know, mental health in the pastorate? I'm going to look at that and go, probably not the best guy to do that. You're not paying very well, and I got a lot of other things going on, so probably no.
Swing a cat in any direction, and you'll hit 25 guys who want to write about that. So, yeah.
None of them well, but all of them verbosely.
Dude, you know what I think ultimately it comes down to? And I actually want to hear you on this, too. For guys in their 40s and 50s, it comes down to, like, how enamored you still are with flying. Like, the idea of flying coach anywhere is repellent to me at this point. And I've said no to stuff just because I don't want to get on an airplane. But clearly, guys like Jared and Ron, they still equate getting on an airplane with, like, something. There's something magical for them in that. Because, like, they're so enamored. And you always get that pic of them on the airplane or in the airport lobby. Like, the airport is still, like, a magical place for these people. And I think, I don't know if somewhere, like, deep in their ego or in their subconscious, they equate getting on a plane with, like, someone somewhere needs me, right? Like, I'm important. If someone's willing to spend $400 to get me to Phoenix or, you know, Sioux City, Iowa or wherever, like, I'm important and this makes me feel good. But for me, like, the veneer is completely off it. And I love aviation. Like, the idea of defying gravity in an airplane is still very compelling to me, but, like, the idea of spooning with some member of the general public for 3.5 hours and making, like, 4 switches so that I can, I don't know, get paid $500 to speak at some conference and sell 4 books, I'm not enamored with that anymore and haven't been for a long time. But I think those guys still are. Where are you at on that?
Yeah, so not quite, again, as is usually the case, I'm not quite at the extreme where you are on this, but also I'm a few years younger than you. So give me 5 years and maybe I will agree with you 100%. There was a point a few years ago. Well, there was a period of time where flying was part of the payment. I get to go do this. So you get invited to speak and you're like, man, this is amazing. This is exciting. This is adventurous. Like, you kind of feel like there's, in all honesty, there's sort of a sense of big shotness, you know, like you were just talking about. Flying has moved into the sense of cost for me, you know, in the cost benefit analysis of opportunity, it's on the cost side now, not the benefit side, because airports suck. And TSA sucks, and coach sucks, and nobody flies me first class, and I've never flown first class or business class or whatever in my life because I can't pay for it, and nobody pays me to do it, and it would be a waste of their money, frankly. Like, if you're a church flying me out, don't use your money that way.
Yeah.
So then the question is, like, where I now have to weigh the benefit of who is this group I'm going to speak to? How much do I love them? How much do I support them? How much do I agree with them? How much do I have to offer them? You know, so I really enjoy when I get a chance to speak to groups who I have an affinity with or have, you know, past relationship with, and I get to drive there. So, you know, because I would rather spend 7 hours in my own car than any amount of time in an airport.
Dude, amen. I'm actually, So I took that camp speaking gig in Pennsylvania for June, and I'm driving. The flight thing was complicated. I was going to have to switch over like two times.
Yeah, you got to go through like Philly and Harrisburg and then drive an hour and a half anyway or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm like, if I'm going to spend a day traveling, I'm going to do it in my car. I'm taking my son Maxim. We're stopping in Canton, Ohio at the Pro Football Hall of Fame on the way up.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm making a whole thing out of it, and I'm delighted. I'm actually looking forward to it, whereas, yeah, if I had to do the Philly-Harrisburg, you know, a whole day in an airport with the general public thing, I would be dreading it. So,
see, and that's one. So that's one, that Camp Sesquo is one that I know, having spoken there a couple times, I feel like I have so much, I have a respect and an affinity and a friendship with a couple people there. So flying is worth it there. And I haven't done a summer thing. It's always been shorter. So flying makes more sense just because travel time. Yeah. But the first time I went up there, it was kind of a calculated. Well, I say the first time I went up there, it was the tail end of me thinking that flying was
still a cool thing.
And then I realized it was, I want to say it was just coming out of kind of the COVID shutdown.
Okay.
And so then that might have been what tipped me, actually, was all the flights I did when you had to wear masks everywhere.
Oh.
And it was just like, flying's always been a challenge.
Yeah.
It is now misery. And I don't think I've ever recovered to the place of being like, no, it's fun again. I'm like, nope, still just a cost.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's true. And you got to really talk yourself into it. And, you know, I still enjoy flying in a vacation context, or if I'm going somewhere with my wife and I know it's going to be great when we get there, then you suffer through the experience. But the truly motivated guys in their 50s, I think they're still enamored with it, you know? And I'd love to do a whole episode about that with Ronnie, like traveling the airport, like his approach to all that, I think would be fascinating.
It might just be, I mean, he may not be enamored with it, but it may just not sort of weigh on him as much.
Yeah, that's true.
He appears enamored
with it.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to throw something out there, and this might be way too simple of an explanation. How much does physical size have to do with this?
Oh, good. Yep.
I mean, I'm 6'2". You're what, 6'2", 6'3"?
Yeah, 6'2". Yep.
Both of us are solidly over 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully more on the solid than on the squishy, squishily over 200 pounds.
Right.
And flying is not made for us. Ronnie's what, 5'9", maybe 5'10"?
Yeah.
And, you know, scrawny Ronnie is a thing.
Right.
And so I think there's just something about, if you're of a certain size, you just fit on a plane better, and so it doesn't feel like misery.
Yeah, that's a great point. That would be interesting to track too, to get the data on, you know, the guys of a certain size or bigger versus like little guys and their love for flying. Yeah, that's good. That's really good.
I will say it's interesting because Jared Wilson flies a lot and seems enamored with it, or at least very okay with it. And he's my size-ish. He might be a little bigger than me. He's around our size, and he doesn't. I don't hear him complain about this. So he might be an anomaly, or maybe my theory sucks. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or maybe he just has like a system to where he's got it figured out. So like maybe he has those pleasant things in the airport that he only gets in the airport, and he allows himself to do it when he's traveling, and that's when that thing happens. You know what I mean?
He gets his like vanilla Dr. Pepper and Swedish fish, and that's his airport treat or something.
Yeah, dude, he gets his vanilla Dr. Pepper, his Swedish fish. He takes the picture of his shoes. I mean, Jared, we goof on him a lot on this program, but I've met him a few times, and he doesn't seem like a ponce, you know. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's
not a bit
enamored with his own image, but he allows himself that one little like shoe and bag photograph, like look at my sweet leather bag and my shoes. And,
yeah, it's almost a comedic gimmick at this point, you know. Why am I blanking on his name? Conan O'Brien. Yeah. I heard him talk about one time where when you're doing kind of an absurd bit, you start it and people chuckle, and then you keep doing it and people think you're insane, and then you just keep doing it until they kind of find the zen of humor and they fall into laughter again. I feel like that's Jared and shoe and leather backpack posts.
That's good.
It's the Conan O'Brien humor effect.
Yeah, and it's good to think about it that way, actually. And because I have huge respect for beating the dead horse joke-wise until it becomes funny again.
Yeah, I mean, that's long we're 10 years into a podcast where this is basically what we do. It's the same jokes over and over and over again. Exactly. So we are committed to this bit.
We are. And Pipe, we should be committed to doing a Patreon episode probably for our most special listeners. So I'm going to say that on this one, we've done what we always do, in that you and I have done a full episode and Ronnie has done half of one. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Jesus wants our fears to launch us toward faith. Then he grins and says, "Do you trust me? Because together we can do this." With Mornings with Jesus, you can start your day in a positive way. Find hope through inspirational stories and scripture. Go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Mornings with Jesus. You can also download the Abide app for biblical meditations at abide.com.